Okay, so we're gonna get started. Here we are already on our eighth class. Wow. just want to wish everybody a very, very happy Thanksgiving. I hope that you all are having a great Thanksgiving holiday. And it's a bit funny to be talking about ghosts over Thanksgiving. It's kind of, we should be talking about being grateful or something, but this is psychic class, so we are going to continue. This is our last class about ghosts and mediumship. So we're going to spend a few minutes in the beginning of class talking about the last details that I want to tell you about ghosts, which mostly has to do with crossing them over. How you cross them over, what do you do if you see one, how do you tell if it's really a ghost, what different kinds of ghosts are there. And I think it's good to know this because as you open your psychic more and more, you're going to encounter the spirits of the dead. It's just the way it is. So the more information you have and the more tools you have around it, the less likely you are to be afraid. And what I don't want is for you guys to be afraid of ghosts. There's really no reason to be afraid of them. So we're gonna educate you and get you all skilled up and get you to the place where you really feel like you're comfortable and confident that if you see one, you know what to do. And the last half of the class today, we're gonna talk we're gonna talk quite a lot about mediumship because I know many of the people in the class are interested in mediumship and how exactly do you do it. And at the end, I'm gonna give you a little bit of an exercise, a guided meditation. That will begin begin the process for you of, I'm going to teach you an easy method, easy-ish method that I know, about how to do some mediumship work. And then in the next class, this will be finishing our tour of the middle realm, and in the next class, we're going to talk about the upper realm and the world of the upper realm, including angels and other light beings and stuff like that. So it's good. It's all good. So last time we talked a lot about the causes of why ghosts happen, what happens to spirits that end up, how they get stuck. We talked about attachment, trauma. It's the choice to stay here, their free will being taken away, fear and guilt, and all these kinds of things. We talked about that. And now, this time I want to talk about kind of some different kinds of hauntings, that you can have, because hauntings aren't always ghosts. And one of the things that I learned when I did house clearings, all those years I did house clearings, was that oftentimes we would go, to clear a house and expect to find a ghost, and it's not a ghost, it's something else. So what might else it be? And how do you tell the difference between that and an actual ghost? So here's the story about that. So oftentimes when I did the house clearings and people report hauntings, it's something that's called it's got a lot of different words. Sometimes it's called a stain, residual haunting, or repeaters are the words that I know about this. There's probably some others, but it's actually the most common kind of haunting. And it doesn't usually actually include the presence of a spirit. So, these ghosts don't go spirits, and it's not even really that there's a spirit there, so it's kind of weird. But what happens with a stain, a residual haunting, or a repeater is that something bad happens in the area, some violent trauma, death. They almost always involve spilling blood, because blood is a very psychically charged substance. And when blood spills on the ground, on the floor, in the walls, in the furniture, it creates this energetic residue that, unless that place is cleared properly, the residual effects of that trauma stay present in the environment. So, it used to be that people knew that, and after there was a murder or suicide or a battle or someplace where blood was spilled, people would call in priests or holy people, shamans, to bless the area, and create, like a safe zone again, to sort of take the negative energy charge out of the environment. So, what happens when there's that kind of blood spilled, it creates like sort of like a flash of trauma that, the trauma and the emotional, psychic, energetic, physical trauma of that event gets sort of imprinted into the physical material, the walls, the floor, the furniture, the ceilings, wherever it is. And the, event gets played over and over again, like a video, like you're watching something on a videotape. And, you can tell that you have a stain or a repeater because, the spirits that you see there, it's like watching a movie. They don't generally interact with you. The one I can give you the example of is this house clearing that I did locally to here quite a long time ago. Every day, Sunday at 4 o'clock, right? The people it was an old house in Milford. They would feel this people coming in, somebody coming in, sort of the heavy steps of a boot steps off, up the stairs, and then there would be sounds in one of the bedrooms, and you could almost hear like somebody take change out of their pocket and put it in, on top of a dresser, and then there'd be like this really weird quiet and almost an echo like the report of a gun. And what we found out when we did research on the house was that a man had committed suicide there, a sort of older man. And that what happened was he, on a Sunday at 4 o'clock, he came up the stairs and he had a big, like, rifle, sawed-off shotgun, and he walked up the stairs and he went into his bedroom and he put the change on the dresser and lay on the bed and put the shotgun in his mouth and committed suicide. so that, the repeater is every Sunday at 4, that would happen, and nobody in the house could ever interact with the ghost. He didn't look at anybody. Most people didn't see him. They heard him. There were some little kids in there that lived there that they said they could see him. But he wasn't attracting their attention. He wasn't interacting with them. He wasn't asking them for help. He wasn't moving their stuff around. It was just like a videotape. And the things about the stains and the repeaters are that it will be something like every day at 4. Also, ghost ships and ghost trains are a really good example of this repeater thing. And with a ghost ship, there's a really famous one off the coast of Block Island, actually, that the Paladin, or I forget the name of it, something like that, that many, 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 many people have seen, like hundreds of people over the years have seen this ghost ship off the coast of Block Island. And in order to see the ghost ship, there has to be a repeating of sort of the circumstances. So the weather has, and the time of year, and the moon phase has to all be right. And then the basically recreating the night of this shipwreck. It was a shipwreck. so you can tell that that it's a stain or a repeater because it never changes. It's always the same. And there's no interaction. There's no spirit there. So when we did the clearing in that place, we sort of reconsecrated, the house, and, unspilled, this is something that's going to sound really weird, but you guys are in advanced class, so I'm going to teach you this. When we have blood spilled like that, unconsecrated blood spilled in violence, the actual substance of blood can open like a portal to the other side, and usually to the shadow lands, right? This is why people used to do blood sacrifices, because it works. It works to create an opening to this other world, this other realm, that sometimes things can come through. So oftentimes, it's, you don't want to freak you out about it, but oftentimes when you do house clearings or work with hauntings, you're dealing with this spilled blood that needs to be cleaned up kind of thing. So James says, like in horror movies, when you're walking down the hall and you see everything covered with blood, yes. So there's something about the psychic imprint that blood has. Blood has an incredibly powerful psychic force to it. When it can be, that's why it's used in ritual magic, that's why it's used in sacrifices and spells, and it creates a problem when it's spilled like that way. And that's also why, for example, battlefields are so incredibly haunted, because in the old days, people after a battle, shamans and holy people would get up and clean that shit up. And unspilled blood in battlefields doesn't usually get, you know, even traffic accidents. This is why traffic accident sites on the highway where people have died and it doesn't get cleaned up properly not only hold the trauma of what happened there, sometimes the restless spirits of the dead that didn't depart, but also can hold other kind of shadowy spirits that come through the portal, you know, that's left behind from, you know, the uncleaned up blood. And it's not that hard to do to reconsecrate houses. This is why house blessings are effective. I think some places it's a little bit like, you know, some places are so sort of cursed, you know, in a way, because so many bad things have happened there. There's no cleaning it up, no matter how much salt you throw around or how many prayers you say or smudge and sage you do. There's some places that just have seen so much bad things that they never are quite right again. But a lot of times, that's not true, and you can reverse the effects of these things. You can close the gateways and portals that this blood opens when it's not taken care of. So you know that that it's not a ghost if it's sort of like has this, you know, every Sunday at 4, when, you know, only when the tide is high in the full moon and there's a storm going, you know, like that's how you tell, and there's no connection or interaction with the spirit. Another kind of haunting that you can see that isn't a true spirit is something that's called a thought form. And a thought form is something that's created. It's sort of, we do thought forms all the time. Anybody who practices law of attraction stuff is using thought forms in a positive way, where your thinking creates a structure, your mind creates a container, and sort of raw psychic energy flows into this container to create a thing. Sometimes it's a good thing and sometimes it's a bad thing. So here's a great example of a thought form. So let's talk about sort of like the devil or Satan in the way that we see him. It's a sort of a fine example of a thought form. So Satan didn't really exist until millions and millions of people on our planet started believing in him, blaming stuff they did on him, seeing him everywhere, you know, and everything. Every time you believe in the devil, you're sort of strengthening this container, this thought form, and then this raw psychic energy flows in there. And then soon, before you know it, you've got something that's actually roaming around that looks like that thing. It's a bit true for the gods and goddesses as well. You know, so thought forms are just a big part. Magicians, black and white magicians and spiritual adepts often form thought forms consciously for good or for ill. It's a bit sort of like creating or conjuring. It's different from conjuring a spirit. Conjuring a spirit is calling one that already exists. So creating a thought form is creating one that didn't exist before you did. But they can often be wandering around the world, and it seems like it's a real entity. In a way it is, but it's also not. So thought forms are not technically ghosts, but they're mistaken for them often. So then there's actual ghosts. Actual ghosts, you know, we've talked about them a lot already, so you know they are sort of this etheric leftover energy from somebody that's passed away and have not crossed over cleanly. So they're earthbound spirits, and they definitely will interact with you. And that they're a mixed bag, ghosts are. You know, they're just like people, and I always say that death doesn't always improve people's temperament. So, you know, if a person was kindly in life, they're probably a kindly ghost. If they're malevolent in life, they're probably a malevolent spirit. I don't think death has much to do with, you know, whether a person is like. So there we get cute and friendly ones, we get mischievous ones, we get sad and pathetic ones. We don't actually have very many that are physically dangerous, but they can be frightening, right? So we see them in all many, many kinds of ways. A lot of times you see them in orbs, the little orbs that happen in pictures. We're going to talk a little bit about that, like how you see them and what we do about them, too. So here's how you tell if you have a real ghost, a real spirit. as opposed to some of these other things. I have, when I'm around ghosts, the uneasy dead, right? A very strong physical reaction to them. So I feel cold, shivery, nauseous. I felt almost like a feeling of cold water gets thrown over me. I'll often feel this vertigo-y, feeling like elevator stomach, you know, when the elevator goes up and your stomach kind of does that. I feel that way. Often get this metallic blood taste in my mouth. It's really unmistakable. Hair on the back of your arms. I cannot mistake the physical signs, that they're around. Just the other day, I was driving my daughter through a town nearby here. It's this little town called Millville. And we were driving through the old historic district of this, and we drove by this house. I don't even know what to say about this house. It was one of the most haunted places that I've ever seen. It was right next to this little mill river. It was old and abandoned, and it was a beautiful house. It was a big, fancy mansion, and it was empty. And she and I looked at each other in, like, horror. Like, the feeling coming out of this place was, like, one of the worst haunted places I've seriously ever been. I was on the road. It was pretty far set back from the road, so... And we were driving by fast, and I still felt as though somebody threw a bucket of cold water on me from inside the car. And we drove by this house for, like, what, 3 seconds? And then we were gone. And both of us were, like, we were like, oh, my God. And I felt it for 15 minutes, 20 minutes afterwards. I dropped her off at her friend's house, and then I had to turn around and drive by it again. and actually, I have to say, part of me really wanted to stop there and poke around it, but it was posted, no trespassing, and so I didn't. But this is what I'm talking about. For me, when I am around the presence of a stuck dead person, there's absolutely no mistaking it. You can't miss it. The other thing is that, you'll notice if it's in an environment, people will talk about cold spots. Cold spots are totally real when you're dealing with ghosts. And what happens with cold spots is that, it's quite interesting, I think, that the ghost, especially if it wants to manifest, which often they do because usually they need help. So they're quite needy, really, you know, ghosts are. And the cold spot, it's awful to tell you that, that's again, because you're in advanced class, I will tell you this. What they do is they stand sort of next to you and they actually steal a little of your life force energy. They'll take some of your energy, and they'll use that energy to manifest in some way. So you'll feel really cold. You'll feel the cold spot. If you're really in a haunted place, you may actually even see the huge temperature differential. And if you've watched the ghost haunting shows, you'll notice like they've got their thermometers and, you know, they're in a room that suddenly drops temperature 20 degrees in a minute. Right? What is that about? That is about the spirit enters and collectively takes a little bit of energy from everybody that's there, and then they use that energy to manifest, to move something, to appear, to make flash the lights on and off, any of those kinds of things that they like to do. They have to have a little bit of juice to do that. And so they take yours. That's why it gets cold. It's a little creepy, right? Okay. And the other thing that, the other way they can do that, is by actually electricity. Sometimes they can use electricity that's running through houses, which is sometimes why the lights dim and why their ghosts are actually, human spirits are actually rather good at manipulating electricity. So they can, sometimes they'll flash the lights and turn things on and off as a way to signal you and get your attention because stuck dead people almost always want to do that. They're always, in a way, trying to get your attention. But the other thing that's really way they can get this energy is through electrical storms, lightning. Lightning gives them the perfect energy that they need to manifest, which is why it's always a dark and stormy night, right? When you see the ghost, the lightning cracks and there's this apparition. So there's quite actually a lot of truth to that lightning story and ghosts. The other way, so if you're in a truly haunted situation or haunted house, everyone, even really non-psychic people, feel the spirits of the uneasy dead. people will say a feeling of presence or being watched. Sounds and smells are very common, particularly smells. And smells, I don't know why ghosts like smells so much, but they do. Tobacco, smoke, perfume, those kinds of things. Because I think smells are so evocative of our memory. They are so connected in with our memory. Do that. And sounds are funny. Sometimes you just hear sounds outright. And sometimes I hear a lot of people, particularly strong auditory psychics, will say they hear sounds in ambient white noise. So listening to a fan or an air conditioner or something like that that's making a noise, you'll hear things underneath that. I don't know why that is, but it's really interesting to me. The uneasy dead, as I said, a lot of them are often very keen on having you notice them. So in order to do that, they will move things around, find your keys, papers, keys, move glasses, things like that. The spirits of the dead, of the human dead, can move things that are fairly light. So, like, I'm talking like under a pound, you know, or two. If you have something bigger than that moving around, you get a really much, 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 much bigger problem. You know, if you have your, you know, bed flying up and down or your refrigerator moving across the room, it is not a ghost. You got a much bigger issue. So they can manipulate small things. And often, sort of another key to this is like, it's like my old house. I posted a couple of ghost stories on the Facebook page. My old house in Milford, had a room nobody ever wanted to go in. And my kids wouldn't sleep in that room. You know, it was just like, even though it was physically, it was a beautiful room. It was one of the prettiest rooms in the house. No one ever wanted to be in that room. It was, you'll notice it's the room you make the guest room. It's the room that, you store boxes in. Clutter gets in that room. You just, you know, have this feeling of wanting to put all your storage in there and close the door. So that's definitely a sign that you, you know, maybe have a ghost there. We talked a lot about in the earlier classes about seeing ghosts in the different ways like that we do. So you will see them, and I really want to say perceive. You'll perceive them in whatever way your strongest psychic is all about. But truly the ghosts, the true uneasy spirits of the dead are like I said, trying to get your attention. A lot of times their energy or their activity is around trying to communicate with us because they really want to communicate with us. So if you're interested in mediumship, in learning how to communicate with the spirits of the uneasy dead and with the dead, easy dead is really important because that's a lot of that's basically what mediumship is like. And we're going to talk more pretty soon in just a minute about that. It's always a question to me about whether, you know, you should engage in the sort of paranormal activities of ghost clearings. I don't know what to say about that. I certainly did years and years of it. It was really great training for me as a psychic to spend a bunch of years doing space clearings, working with hauntings. I really don't have any desire to do it now anymore at this point in my life. I'm really happy working as a teacher and a healer, and I'll deal with ghosts and dead people when they come in on my clients because it's what my clients need, but I don't really want to go to somebody's house and do space clearings. I don't do it anymore, but I'm glad I spent time doing it. It is a rather high-risk occupation for psychics, and I certainly took my knocks and bumps and, you know, brought spirits home with me and got sick and had attachments and, you know, was followed home by creepy things. Like, you know, that's sort of par for the course if you're going to engage in that. And ghost hunting, we're going to talk just a minute about ghost hunting. And I think, you know, there's sort of two schools of thought on ghost hunting. And if you watch the TV shows, you'll see both of these schools. I have my opinions about it, which are rather strong. And you're certainly, you know, to form your own opinions about it. But the two schools of thinking on this are, they're sort of like the techno hunters that are, they're what they're trying to do is prove the existence of ghosts somehow, or they'll come in to try and establish whether or not the place is haunted, and that's their main objective. You know, I don't like those. I think that's a bad idea. I think it's unfortunate for the homeowner, and you know, there are a couple of the TV shows where they do that. I really, really, really don't approve at all. I think it's terrible for the people that live there. Because the whole point is trying to stir up the ghost enough that they get to capture it on tape or everything, and at the end they're like, yes, your place is haunted. And then they leave. And they leave the homeowner with a really pissed off ghost. That's not helpful. That's, and a lot of the things that they do, EVP, which is when they use tape recordings, you know, to try and catch ghosts on tape, or some of the spirit communication boxes that they have are often act a little bit like Ouija boards and attract all the spirits in town to that place. So if you don't have any ghosts and you start doing EVPs, or you start, it's like the Ouija board. If you didn't before, you will, because all the stray ghosts in the neighborhood, all the stray, you know, stuck dead people within 5 miles are going to come around and just check out what's going on over there. So it's quite, that activity is quite attractive. And then even worse, if they feel like they have a non-human spirit, present, they will do something called religious provocation, which is to, bring religious icons or, you know, stir things up from a religious standpoint in the house, which is, if you have a non-human spirit, is like poking the hornet's nest in the worst way. And I think a lot of these, my problem with the techno hunters is they don't actually believe. That's what I think. So it's a bit like, you know, playing with something that's quite dangerous and not really believing that, you know, you can actually get hurt. And I just think it's really irresponsible and quite, potentially damaging to the people that they do that. Then there are other ghost hunters that are, much more responsible and actually help people, you know, which I have, I think is what we're supposed to do. And their point isn't to, I mean, they'll do investigative work, and when you do ghost hunting, it's always a combination of, you know, looking through, there's always a lot of research that has to be done. So the history of the home needs to be researched. You have to find out what happened, you know, in all the ways we can do that. And then sometimes they'll use, like, you know, their equipment to sense what's going on. They do interviews, and their function or goal is to try and help the person, help the ghost move on, solve the problem, put the spirits at rest, help the family that's there, or just kind of clean things up. But that's much the way that it's much, to me, makes way more sense to do that. And those people, even if they use sort of rather dangerous tools like EVP and some of the spirit box communication technologies that there are, if they're doing it with the idea of helping and crossing over people and helping the homeowners, I think that's actually fine. So if you like that sort of thing, and you know, there are some really good local paranormal investigators, you can ride around with them. The best ones, in my opinion, work with psychics. So they'll have their tools and they'll have their, you know, gadgets and their technical stuff. And then they also will bring in psychics to work with them. And I think that's really interesting and cool, you know, way to do it. So we talked a little bit about, you know, the way that ghosts communicate with us. And we talked about empathy as being a big thing. So if you're a psychic and, you know, one of you guys wanted to travel around one of these people, or you wanted to do some psychic investigation, oh, God, maybe we should do a field trip to that house I saw in Millville. That would be really interesting. A long time ago, when my very first office was in this mill, in the front part of the building before the mill was renovated, I was teaching this class on ghosts, and as part of the class, it was a beginner class, we did a night walk of the mill, and we toured around the mill. It was super haunted back then, and scared the crap out of my class, and half of them didn't come back to the next class. So, it was sort of funny, but Yeah, I learned the hard way not to take the beginner class on the tour of the haunted mill at night. Nope. But, you know, you will get them, like, you'll see things, so they communicate with us through photos and tapes, like talked about EVP, and pictures is a great way to get images of ghosts. One of my friends is a photographer, and her specialty is taking photographs, and she gets the coolest freaking pictures, you know, orbs and blurs and ribbons and figures and all kinds of crazy stuff. So ghosts really actually can show up on that in pretty interesting ways, and if you do some research on the internet, you know, you'll see some very, very, very cool pictures of spirits that are available. It's always a little, you know, with Photoshop and the kind of stuff, it's always, you have to wonder how much of it is doctored, but I've seen some stuff that I really felt like was pretty legit and was very cool. The other way that ghosts, they'll talk to us, and for you empaths, this is useful, is through empathy and through communicating by how they feel. And they will push how they feel on you. It's one of their most powerful ways of communicating. So if you're around a spirit and you feel really afraid, it's maybe pushing its feeling on you. So it's, you know, you might feel afraid yourself, but it may be like, this is how I felt, you know, and it pushes that feeling on you. Or you might feel angry and it's like, this is how I felt. So be aware of the feelings and emotions that come up for you, because often when you're around a spirit of a dead, uneasy dead, they are communicating by pushing their feelings. So, and the other, now we're going to talk about how to go about clearing them. But the one thing I want to tell you is that except in very, very, very rare circumstances, they can't hurt you. So think about it. They're non-corporeal. They don't have a form. They can't move anything over, you know, 2 pounds or even, not even that really. They can scare you. They can freak you out, but they really actually can't hurt you. They just don't have, they're not very powerful in our world. If you get a spirit that has a capacity to hurt you, it is not a ghost. It's something else that we're not going to talk about right now. So James is asking a question about people who attract ghosts. And yes, there are what I call ghost magnets. And there are people that just are sort of tuned to the dead channel, you know. And attract ghosts like that when I was a kid. So every house I've ever lived in has been haunted. I love haunted houses. I'm drawn to haunted houses. If I'm looking for houses, I'm like, ooh, let's pick the haunted one. And if the house wasn't haunted before I lived there, it will be after I move in, because every house, every ghost in a 5-mile radius comes around after I move in. So there are people that are ghost magnets. And the ghost magnets are usually latent mediums. So they have mediumship capacity that they haven't developed. And in fact, if you are a medium, if you have that capacity, then the best thing you can do is train yourself, because the more trained you are in it, the less likely you are to unconsciously draw ghosts to you. And I think, I've seen this happen over and over and over again with the ghost magnets, is they pull the spirits in around them until it gets very bothersome, and they have to make a choice. Do they suck it up and learn how to deal with the ghosts and spirits and properly and train their gifts? Or often they'll just get pestered to the point where they either have to shut down their gifts completely, or they have to, you know, really figure it out. And I think a lot of times that I worked with this one girl who was really super mediumistic and just incredible talent. And she just went through this phase of being totally plagued by the spirits of the dead visiting. And it took her a while, and me a while actually, to figure out that they weren't there to hurt her. They were there to teach her. And everyone she dealt with taught her a different lesson around clearing them and speaking to them and how it all worked. So after a while, she began to see them not as these horrible threats, but as these allies that were coming to help teach her, school her on how to, you know, manage her gifts. So if your cousin is a ghost magnet, she's probably got some latent mediumship ability. That's what I think. So here's what you can do, and this is the basic formula for discernment. Discernment is the ability that psychics have to tell what spirits are what. And we all have discernment. some way or another. I mean, just the way that you can tell what you think about people and whether people are good or bad, we can do the same thing with spirit. So the basic formula for discernment is when you feel something, presence of something you want, and you might be startled, like say you wake up in the middle of the night, it's a classic example. You wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, something's in the room here with me. Which happens to me fairly regularly, but what I do is, after you get over the startlement of it, of like, ooh, there's something here, you have to decide, is it benevolent, neutral, or malevolent. And 90% of the time they fall in the neutral category, okay? So benevolent feeling ones, and you know there are because of how you feel. You'll feel happy, light, uplifted, you know, some good kind of feeling. And the neutral ones, which are mostly are what you're going to get, you don't feel one way or the other. And then the bad ones, the sort of malevolent spirits, you'll feel horrible. You'll feel, you know, frightened, dread, scared, you know, really, it's really quite bad. Just the same way if some random person walked in your door unexpectedly, you know, you would categorize them in one of those three, you know, categories like instantly, right? And same true for living people. 90% of the time they'd be falling in the neutral category. And they come around, they're curious. They come around at night a lot, especially when we're sleeping or dreaming, people that have natural mediumistic abilities, because we light up the astral plane like a little light bulb when we're sleeping. And they come around like, what's that little light over there? And they know that on some level you can or have the ability to communicate. So that's again going back to the ghost magnet. So if you feel a ghost and you want it to move along, here's sort of how you do it. My preference is to begin just like if a person walked into my room, is to be polite about it, right? We start with politeness. So I would say like a sort of gentle reminder for them, you know, ask nicely, okay, like, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, I don't really want to talk to you right now, can you please leave, right? And you ask gently and you just ask them to move along. And if I always start with that. If that doesn't work, then you get a little bit more demanding, and you can insist. And you can insist in the name of Jesus Christ, or Archangel Michael, and you call in the big guns in the name of Jesus Christ, I demand that you leave, and you mean it. You feel a lot of energy and charge in your third chakra. I get the bad dog voice, bad ghost. And claim your space, insist that it's yours, and demand that they leave. Truly, most of the time that works. Okay. And the thing is, like you know, if you're a medium, you don't have to deal with every ghost that comes around, just like you don't have to deal with every person that crosses your path, right? And I deal with them, like I put a lot of boundaries around my capacity to deal with the spirits of the dead. So my deal with my guides right now is I only deal with the dead ones that come in with my clients. So I'll be happy to during office hours. If it's an emergency basis, sometimes my guides will be like, yeah, you have to deal. It's like I'm on call once in a while. I'll deal with something that crosses my path just because it's what I have to do. But, you know, you don't need to be dealing with them every night at 3 o'clock in the morning because you need your sleep, right? So you decide how much you want involvement. And some of you have no affinity for dealing with the spirits of the dead and are just waiting to get to angel class. That's totally fine. You don't have to deal with this at all. But for those of you that have this problem, this is what you do about it. The other thing you can do that I've done on occasion when I did ghost space clearing was when I wasn't able to clear, this is a little bit controversial, but what I learned from one of my teachers, how to banish a ghost, right? So banishment is if they won't clear but you want them out of your house and won't cross over, you can sort of banish them, which is to sort of like kick them out, forcibly remove them from your environment. And it's sort of like a restraining order in ghost world. So that's a possibility. If you need to know how to do that, you can talk to me offline and I'll teach you how to do that. But generally, the way that we're doing this, and I also think the other thing is really, really good to do on a regular basis is to clear your house, have your house cleared by either blessed by a priest or clergy person of your faith, and most of them will do it for a pretty small donation. you know, you donate something to the church, you have Father O'Malley come over and bless your house, and the spirits go away. Incredibly effective. And if you don't want to do that, then have a feng shui person do it. Cindy, who's part of this class, does feng shui. She's amazing house blessings. That's incredibly effective at clearing this energy out of your house. So having your house blessed is really good to do. So, one of the most, if you want to actually learn how to cross them over, and there are many ways to do this. So you call in the light, you imagine this sort of portal coming and this beam of light coming down, and you ask them to step in and do that. I like Jesus, Archangel Michael, and Azrael, the angel of death. They're really good at that. And sometimes it's called the Rainbow Bridge. It has all these different names to it, but you open the portal and you imagine, and I just visualize or imagine a big beam of light coming down. And then you say, okay, for the ones that are lost and just are looking for the exit, like they'll just leave really quickly and be very grateful. The ones that get more stuck and are sort of afraid and don't want to cross over because they're afraid of what's going to happen to them on the other side need a little coaxing. So you can ask your guides to help. You can ask also bring in somebody that they love, like, you know, ask their guides, the spirits of their loved ones who have gone before them to be present, and you know, look into the light. Your mother's standing there and she's holding out her hand. All you have to do is take your mother's hand and, you know, into the light you go. I often remind them that, you know, they're already forgiven. Jesus died for your sin. You're already forgiven. You don't have anything to worry about. You know, go ahead and feel safe crossing over. Most of the time, that kind of thing that you do will work. And there's nothing so stubborn as a stuck dead person. So the ones that don't want to go easily, what needs to happen is there needs to be something called the witnessing. And the witnessing is when they kind of are, it's like I would say, like, clearing ghosts is like therapy, but they don't keep your office hours and they don't pay your fee. So sometimes they need therapy before they cross. And what that is like they need to unload the trauma. So how therapy works when I do it with living people is people come in, they tell me about their pain, and I listen compassionately, and then as they talk about it, the energy of their pain and trauma is released. And this happens with living people, it's the same thing with dead people. They need to get something off their chest. They need to share their pain. The pain of how they died, the pain of the trauma that kept them here, the pain of whatever's unresolved and painful. And I know it's a really sappy TV show, but very Hollywoodized, but if you've ever seen the TV show The Ghost Whisperer, it's really not unsimilar to what she does. And that show is produced by James Van Praagh, who's actually a fabulous medium. And the way, what she does in her kind of silly Hollywood way to release the energy around the stuck dead ghost is very, very, very true. It's very similar to what needs to happen. So you can, if you choose to do this, and particularly if you have a way to communicate with them, if you can see them, hear them, or you're empathic, for me, I kind of get all of it. They will tell me their story of what happened. And I'm like, oh, you poor thing, you know, like, tell me all about it. And they do, and then they feel better, you know, and then they go. So 90% of the time that works. And when I was doing a lot of space clearing, I used to carry around sort of these Catholic prayers and rites in of passage and the rite of supreme unction, which I used to say in Latin, you know, to bless the person and like, Jesus has forgiven you, off you go then. So they have to get all this stuff off their chest. I kind of always liked that part of it. But then again, I like that part in the healing work that I do now anyway. So it's sort of a particular talent you need if you're going to do a lot of crossing over of the dead ones. So there's sort of like, you know, the beginner's version of crossing over the dead ones, which is you just ask them to leave, remind them they're dead, show them the door. You know, in the name of Jesus Christ, I ask you to leave, whatever. Then there's the intermediate one, which is you create the connection, you make the bridge, you create an opening to the other side, upwards, and you're here you go, you know, and you listen to what they have to say, and they go. And then the most advanced one, way you can do this work is to really get trained in a very much deeper kind of clearing that you really is a specialization that requires a lot of training and mentorship and work because it's a high risk activity, psychically speaking. So you can decide where you are in that. At the very least, you need to know the basic, get out of my room, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, please leave in the name of Jesus Christ, I ask you to go. I also have to tell you that I think Sage does really actually nothing, zero, to clear a stuck spirit. It just doesn't work. Sage is fabulous for clearing leftover emotional energy, you know, and that's what it's really good for. So it's good for clearing your healing room. It's good for clearing your house after you have a fight, you know, with your spouse. It's good for clearing stuck human energy. It's really almost completely ineffective for clearing a stubborn, stuck spirit. You have to do more than just sage. So it's a tool, but it's not the be-all and end-all. All right, so knowing, and as you open psychically, and I noticed that some people said that seeing ghosts is one of the things they're afraid of. They don't want to do it. So, it may have in the past been what's prevented you from opening your psychic. And what I would say is you don't have to see them with your eyes like I always do. You can perceive them, and you already do. Anyone does, really, who's around them, even the muggles. Even the muggles feel the presence of the uneasy dead. So if we change the word see to perceive, you already do. And you don't have to see them. The psychic sight's always a mixed bag anyway, right? So you can totally do this work without seeing. You don't have to see them, but you will perceive them, right? And you already did. So let's talk about mediumship. Mediums are psychics that specialize in talking to dead people. It's a tough job, I think, and I do it because it's not my forte, honestly, as a psychic. I do it because my clients need it. I would say maybe about a quarter of the sessions that I do are mediumship sessions. And it's not that you don't like it, it's just tough work. And it can be very rewarding. It's very, very healing for people to be able to have closure. People need resolution. They need to believe there's life after death. They need to communicate things with their loved ones that they didn't have an opportunity to do before their loved one died. I think often what's healing about it is that you can sometimes have a communication with a dead loved one that you weren't able to have when they were living. So especially if they cross over cleanly and they're the easy dead, sort of the limitations and point of view limitations, prejudices, closed-mindedness fall away, and the person goes more to their soul form. And you can actually often have, if you had a difficult relationship with somebody that was alive, have a better relationship or communication with them once they're dead. Honestly, I see it happen all the time. And I do sessions for people where they had a really dicey, tricky relationship with a living person, and then totally resolve everything once that person dies because the person can show up and through the medium say they're sorry, explain things, cough up information. They could never see things from the other person's point of view in a way they never could do when they were living. Now, mediums, usually it doesn't matter whether the person's an uneasy dead or easy dead. Mediums talk to both sides of the fence. So if you're a medium, you need to learn how to talk to the easy dead and the uneasy dead. If you're interested in mediumship, training more, I'm going to teach you what I know about it. But if you're interested in training more about it, then you want to check out the Spiritualist Church. So there's one in Quincy and there's one in Watertown, and they specialize in training mediums. So a lot of the really famous mediums, John Edwards, John Holland, these people, Rita Berkowitz, who I know pretty well. Rita used to be the teacher, the minister over at the Quincy Spiritualist Church. So they specialize in training mediums how to do it, and they have classes all the time in mediumship. And some of them are good. Some of the teachers are great. Some of them are sort of average or not so good, sort of depends. But in general, that's not a bad place to get training. I really love, the spiritualist movement used to be huge. At the turn of the century, it was, you know, in the late 1800s and early 1900s, it was one of the biggest churches, like one of the fifth biggest church in the United States. And now it's very sort of passe and you know, considered quite silly, but at the time, and there was this whole spiritualist community called Lilydale in upstate New York, it's still there, and you can go and take classes there and get mediumship work done by people that live in Lilydale, and have even been, you know, generations of mediums have lived there. And there's some kind of cool books and TV documentaries about Lilydale in upstate New York. So if you're interested in the spiritualist church, look it up. Okay. So, you know, I don't know what to say about mediumship. If you have it as a gift or you don't, that's kind of what I think. Although, even if you have it as a gift, as part of your life purpose, you still have to train it. You still have to work it. And even if you have nothing like that, if you're interested in it, you can, of course, develop it like any psychic skill. Any other skill. There's sort of a rare form of mediumship I want to talk about because it's what people get really scared about, and it's called physical mediumship. So physical mediums, and I know very few of these, it's a very rare gift, and it is the, and I have it occasionally, very occasionally it happens to me, where physical mediums see the spirits of the dead as if they are physically present. So they see the spirits of the dead as solid and real looking as another person. And that's a lot of times what people think mediumship is like. Well, I'm not a medium because I don't see the spirits of the dead like they're standing like a real person in the room with you. It's rare and it's rather uncomfortable for the people that have it. I had it when I was a kid and it freaked me out so much it turned it off. And when it happens, it still kind of upsets me. So when I do mediumship work, I don't generally see them like, sometimes I do, but I don't generally see them like a solid flesh and blood kind of experience. That's what a physical medium does. I see them with my inner eye, with my inner self. So what I know about mediums is that almost all mediums that I know of are empathic because they need to feel, as we talked about, ghosts push their emotions on us as part of their communication. And we need to hold the witnessing of their stuff by holding their feelings. So you should know that there's sometimes a combination, a tie between mediumship and empathy. Most mediums, and the way that the mediums are trained these days, particularly within the spiritualist church, is to do what's called gallery-style readings. So a gallery style, this is not what I do and never did it, and I can't do it and I don't like it. But I'm going to tell you about it because you probably have heard about it. But gallery style readings is when the medium stands in the room, and the Long Island medium, who I think is fabulous, by the way, and it's another medium. My daughter loves that show. Check out the Long Island medium on TV. I don't like her ethical standpoint of the hit and run psychic reading where she just, you know, goes to get her nails done and reads the girl who's doing her nails. I mean, it's a TV show, so they've asked permission, but it sort of makes it seem like she's doing these readings without having the person's permission, which is completely uncool in my opinion, but I know that's not really what's happening. But she's good. She's a fabulous example. So mediums are, the best ones always get really deep confirmation. And I have a friend who's an unbelievable medium. She's really incredible. She gets names, dates, facts, you know, your mother, you know, Suzanne is here and she died on this day and you buried her in a red dress and this is where the money is hidden in the backyard. Like they get, and the people, that's the best kind of mediumship because it proves, it comes with proof. It's amazing, but the gallery readings are, you stand in front of a room, and I mentioned the Long Island medium because she does this on her TV show. You stand in front of the room and you say, I feel that there's a spirit here. He's a boy in a wheelchair. Does he belong to anybody? You know? And someone would be like, oh yes, that's my son, you know, or whatever. So the gallery readings, you open up and you see who shows up. I never learned it that way. I think it's not useful at all. So I'm going to teach you how I do it, which is very different from that. The other thing that's difficult about mediumship, and if you want to study mediumship, you have to be prepared to deal with this, is that you are going to be dealing with people's grief. And it's not, it's not the dead people's grief that's hard, it's the living people. So half of mediumship is the skills that it takes to communicate to the dead and pass the message over, and the other half is the skill that it takes to deal with the grief of the people that are alive. And they're both tricky. They're both hard, you know? And sometimes the dead person part is easier than skillfully learning how to deal with the grief of the living people. So, you know, it takes a lot of training to get good at this. I really love, Roland Comtois. I know him really well. He comes to Solstice, a lot, and he's around here. You know, he's an unbelievable medium and a really, really great guy. Kind, lovely person. And he's just sort of a shiny example of his compassion for the living is palpable. And it makes his messages bearable because he can sometimes deliver, you know, hard messages, but you know he cares so deeply about you. He's an incredible example of somebody that's amazing at dealing with both sides of these things. So if the way that I do it, and this is just, we're going to do this as a meditation, but in a minute, but the way that I always did it was, nobody taught me how to do this. I just figured it out by myself when I was little. When I want to do mediumship for somebody, and it doesn't matter actually whether the person is uneasy dead or the easy dead, is I look at the person. So say Susie comes in and she wants to talk to Uncle Fred. Uncle Fred died. I look at Susie's heart and I see like a cord that goes, and it, to me, the cords are labeled. She's got a ton of cords that go out to all the people that she loves, and sometimes they're gnarly looking, you know, dense cords. Sometimes they're these light filaments, depending on how healthy the relationship is. And we all have a bunch of them, and I just look for the one that says Uncle Fred on it, okay? And you follow the cord to, you find Uncle Fred. And it doesn't matter which side of the fence he's on. It doesn't matter actually if he's living. It doesn't matter if he's in heaven. It doesn't matter if he's a ghost. If you follow that cord, you will find Uncle Fred. And that's always how I've done it. It makes so much more sense to me than opening it up to the spirits that are hanging around, because who knows, you know. I find that clients are really particular. They don't want to know who's around them. They want to talk to Uncle Fred. They want to talk to their kid that died. They want to talk to their mother, their parent, or their husband that died. They have particular people they want to talk to, so you know, the way that I do it is you go out and you find that person and you bring them back. You follow the cord and you find that person. It doesn't matter where they are. And it's just so practical, honestly. The gallery style readings just make no sense to me, sadly, and I suck at them. I'm not good at them, but I am good at this, follow the cord and find the person you want to talk to. If you are doing mediumship work, you will probably, and if this is part of your gig as a psychic, it's part of your life purpose, you're going to have one of your guides as the crossroad guide. So the crossroad guides are the guides that manage the traffic between the worlds of the living and the worlds of the dead, whether it's heaven or the shadowlands. The crossroad guide opens the doors, lets the information through, and shuts the doors. It's really important if you're going to do mediumship work to establish who your crossroad guide is. And I say the crossroads because so often they're standing at the crossroad. You see them standing, you know, literally in this sort of in-between space that's the crossroads between the living and the dead. And they can be very cool, interesting guides. They're, you know, sometimes people have like kind of like a Hecate kind of guide, like a crone. You know, we think of sort of the old witchy kind of witch. Older woman. One of my friends has Papa Legba as her crossroad guide. He's this old, crazy old voodoo priest. The voodoo is fabulous for the crossroads because they get a foot. The voodoo practitioners have a foot in the light and a foot in the dark, and sometimes you need that when you're dealing with the dead. You can also have power animals that work as crossroad guides: crow, raven, bat, owl. Any of those ones that see in the dark are particularly good at crossing the veil. And some of you will find ways to get information from the dead that you send your guide to get, you send the crow or the bat or the raven to cross the veil and bring you the information. That's very handy. What I absolutely don't ever want you guys to do is journey to the Shadowlands in your meditation. Don't do it. Don't go walk around in the realm of the dead. It's not a good idea. It's not particularly safe, and there's no reason to do it. So you bring the person to you, or you send your spirit guide to fetch them, or fetch the information that you need and bring them to you. Do not go wandering around the Shadowlands. Don't do it. It's just not, it's not for us. So, James asks the gatekeeper. Gatekeepers can be a little different. Gatekeepers, can help you cross to any of the realms, you know. So the gatekeepers are, you know, just between any dimension. The crossroad guides usually specialize in the dead. So it might depend. You might have a gatekeeper guide that is also your crossroad guide. I find really the only people that have crossroad guides are people with strong mediumship ability. This is a guide that's really dedicated to helping them get information from the dead. So when I do mediumship work, most of the time I'm talking to people that are the easy dead. Very occasionally I'll be talking to somebody that's the uneasy dead. If they're already in another life, which sometimes happens, like somebody wants to talk to Uncle Fred, but he's already reincarnated, he's already living in another life, that's okay. It just means that I'll feel them like I'm talking on the like a long distance phone call. And I just get that information, okay, they're in this other life, I often can say where they are, or I feel like they won't come into the room in a way, they won't come present because their energy's already in another lifetime. But the recently departed, and oftentimes when I do mediumship work, it's for people that's recently departed, they want to talk about how they died. They want to share that information, they want to share their experience, they want to tell their loved one who's coming what it was like. Sometimes they'll talk about what's going on in their life review, how they felt at the moment of their death. They'll have messages or talk about unfinished things, you know, like the things I never got to tell you when we were alive. And like I said, they often have a really different perspective on life and their loved ones, because they're seeing the world without the veil of the ego on it. And they've often had these huge realizations that they want to share with their loved ones. So that's most of what I do when I do mediumship work with people. They want to know, the people that come in want to know their loved one's okay. And if they're not okay, they want to help crossing them over. They want to know something that reassures them that the spirit endures, you know. And also they often want to know whether that there was a purpose or a reason why that person died. And sometimes there's a reason, sometimes there isn't. But that's also something that often gets talked about when I do mediumship work. So let's try it. Let's try. We're going to do not a scary or hard little meditation. In the meditation, I'm going to take you to the crossroad, which is as far as you're going to ever want to get, to the Shadowlands. You're going to meet your crossroad guide if you have one, and I'm going to show you how to find the cord and follow it to somebody who is departed and see where that takes you. Okay? All right, so here we go on our meditation. So you're going to close your eyes. Start with a nice deep inhale breath. Really, really ground and clear. Bring yourself into your body and take a moment to really clear your energy field. Nice deep breath in. Fill yourself up with light on the inhale. And exhale down. Activate the grounding cord and drop anything down that grounding cord that you would like to let go of. And another breath like that. and feel your feet, feel your hip bones, your sit bones. And I want you to really strengthen the outer edge of your energy field right now. So one breath, breathe light in the top of your head. And draw that energy to the outer edge of your energy field. Make the bubble, the barrier layer really, really, really strong. You're going to need it for Thanksgiving anyway. So make it nice and tight. And you, that's everything, and everything that's you stays on the inside of this grounding cord. And everything that's not you stays on the outside. Nothing can get in without your permission. And from this place now, you're going to travel to your inner sanctuary. Journey to that place where you go, where we do these exercises. And again, notice where you are. What is your inner sanctuary like today? It's the same place you go, always go is a different place. And what I find, and you may be finding this now, having done a lot of these meditations, there's a little landscape over there. So I can kind of land in different places that are all interconnected. They're all part of the same internal landscape that I have. So a couple of little different zones. I could probably draw it on a map. It would be kind of cool to do that. So in this time, during this time, this particular meditation, I want you to travel to, in your inner sanctuary to the place, to where the crossroads are. The crossroads. Maybe really looks like a crossroad. Maybe look like two roads that cross. Sometimes it looks like a bridge over water. And if you get a bridge, then you're going to stand at the center of the bridge. If you get a crossroad, you're going to stand in the center of the crossroad. Just imagine, be interested in where yours is. And you're going to call a protector guide with you. So have your protectors with you. And then you're also going to invite or call into the crossroad your crossroad guide or your gatekeeper guide. The crossroad guide is the one that's going to help you talking to the spirits of the departed. Just notice who shows up for you without judgment, without expectation, without fear if you can manage it. Guides are helpful. They're here to help and support us. So this guide is here to help and support you. And you have your protector with you. And you're going to spend a few minutes talking to this crossroad guide. So just notice, what do you see and feel? What do they look like? What is your feeling about them? What is their name? And ask them to tell you, what is your role in this work? Is it for you or not? And if it's for you, what is your angle on it? What is your unique ability to do this? And ask your crossroad guide, how do they bring information from the dearly departed to you? What is their way of bringing it to you? And I want you now, with the help of your crossroad guide and your protector guide, to stand in this place, and you're going to call forth the spirit of somebody you know, one of your dearly departed who passed that you would like to speak to. And you can see what happens. You might ask your crossroad guide to fetch the person and bring them here. You might see the cord that has their name coming out of your heart, and you almost pull on the cord like it's lassoed around them, and you're going to pull them into range, so to speak, to speak with you. Just see what happens. And you don't have to do anything big and heavy with this loved one. You can just tell them you miss them, you love them, wish them happy Thanksgiving, see if they have a message for you. You might ask them anything you need to on your end. If there's any unfinished business, say what you need to say. And then you're going to release this loved one back to wherever they came from, beloved dead, taking their blessing with you. And thank and honor your crossroad guide. Bow to them, thank them, shake their hand, hug them, whatever you want to do to honor their help. They're very sacred and special guides. And then you and your protector now are going to walk back away from the crossroads, back to the center of your inner sanctuary. And here you're going to clear yourself now. So imagine again, beam of light coming in the top of your head, exhaling down the grounding cord, releasing any leftover energy, emotion, feelings, whatever came up for you in this practice exercise. You're going to drop it down the grounding cord, refill yourself with light, the brightest light you can imagine, filling the top of your head, your whole body, all the way down to your feet, and then blowing it out, exhaling out. As many breaths as you need like that to clear yourself. Come back into your body, feel your grounding cord, feel your legs and your hips. Wiggle your toes and fingers now. Begin to leave the inner sanctuary. Come back into the present moment. Come back into the room now. Wiggle your fingers and toes, and when you feel ready, you can open your eyes. So that was a taste of how you do that. I wanted to teach you more about that, and we're gonna end class, but I'll stay on the line for a few minutes like I normally do to answer any questions you have about what happened. And in the meantime, I'd love to hear if you are doing this at a different time, if you're not doing this class live, which many of you aren't because of the holiday. Post on Facebook. Keep us updated about what's going on. And I wish you all a very, very, very happy Thanksgiving, safe travels. And we will see you next week on Thursday at our regular time with our conversation about the upper world. Thanks for class today.